Blog Talk Radio.
October 15, 2009. This is your host Doug Kelly here with Grant Rubendunst.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show.
Yes, tonight we're going to be talking about the topic, among others, of how do you put on some kind of a conference or a little event that you might want to do in your community. I mean, it could be anything from a day long or even longer down to just, you know, maybe an evening at a library or some kind of a partial day type of show. A lot of groups like to do that. They like to do it in the interest of education. And so we thought maybe we would talk about some of the different techniques and tips that might help make it go a little bit easier. So we're going to be welcoming Seth Weiler, who does this kind of thing, to talk with us in just a moment. If you have questions, we'd love to hear them. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7798. If you have a computer headset on your computer and you're listening there, you can use that click to talk button as well. You can also go in the chat room and type your questions there. We can take those there too. So just a couple of housekeeping things that we want to announce and probably announce at the end as well. In just 1 week is the deadline for the Fake a Photo contest, so if you are interested or getting ready for that, be sure and put your submissions in the next week. It's a week from tonight, midnight Eastern time is the deadline for submissions, and then we will announce the winner in a couple of weeks on our Halloween special. So hoping that folks will want to do that and enter their submissions, and it will be fun, it will be educational, and of course you'll be able to win some stuff, you know, stuff is good.
Absolutely.
Stuff is good, and that includes a year membership at Paranexus, as well as your choice of the CPI or the leadership certification courses. So, and there's a first and second winner, and there'll be a popular vote winner as well. So anyway, bear that in mind. If you're not yet familiar with Paranexus or you are interested in joining, we'd love to have you. Just visit paranexus.org for more details. So, without any further ado, let's welcome Seth Weiler, who is someone who puts on conferences quite a bit and has had some experience doing that. Seth, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I truly appreciate it.
Seth, it's nice to have you with us tonight. We also want to give a shout out to Jackal too. So, but it's a real pleasure to have you with us tonight. We understand that you have plans to put on a pretty good-sized UFO conference with some pretty eminent speakers in the near future.
Absolutely. Yes, I do. Actually, the website I'll start plugging away right now, if anybody wants to go, is UFOinfoweekend.com. Real easy to spell. I can sum up the entire event in basically three sentences. It's a UFO convention right outside of NASA the weekend of a shuttle launch.
Wow.
That pretty much says it all.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen a shuttle launch, that's the best spot to view it at. You can't get better. That's like having front row seats.
Pretty much you're able to see Pad 39A from our hotel, which is great, which is the Holiday Inn in Cocoa Beach. We have some really amazing speakers who are coming out. We also have some great entertainment that's going to be coming out. And let's see, what else? We also have some great musical guests as well as some media guests that are coming too. We even are going to be doing some topics with some of the speakers that are non-UFO related as well. So
oh, that's great. And you can have a panel discussion. And why don't you tell our audience about some of the folks that you're planning on bringing in, because I think they're going to be as thrilled as we were when we heard about this.
All right. I'll give you some names. We'll give you Stanton Friedman is coming.
Bravo.
We'll give you Nick. Thank you. We'll give you Nick Redfern coming. Nick Pope is coming. Kathleen Martin, who I'm sure most of you will recognize as Betty and Barney Hill's niece. We are also going to have Peter Robbins joining us, who is one of the foremost experts on the Rendlesham incident. I'm also going to be adding on Travis Walton. I think most people will recognize him from Fire in the Sky. And if all works out, I'm begging and pleading, but I'm going to try and get Davey Sweeney there, too, so they can actually compare notes as to what was in film or what really happened and who's more accurate.
Wow. That's quite a lineup.
Oh, wait. There's more to be announced soon. Look forward to it, folks.
And as far as the dates, those are unspecified at this point. But
Actually, no, that's not entirely accurate. Originally, the event itself was scheduled for November 12th through 15th of 2009, which is about 30 days away. But due to unforeseen circumstances, we've actually confirmed the date of July 29th, 2010. And that actually is a firmed up date. I didn't have a chance to let you guys know that earlier, but that is a confirmed date for the rescheduling of the event.
Okay. Terrific. And why don't you tell our audience what's going to coincide with your event there, too?
It is pretty much the last shuttle launch ever. So it's going to be a shindig and a half.
Yeah. That's the last one to go to the space station, and probably be using Soyuz after that.
They'll be using, some unannounced technology that we've had for God knows how long. And we are not supposed to have it, and we all know the real story back there, don't we?
Yeah, certainly hope so. So Seth, tell us a little bit about how did you get started in this business? Have you always been interested in like the field of the paranormal or UFOs, or how'd you get into this line of work?
Great question. I can honestly say since my childhood I was pretty much a freak and a geek and an outcast. So that lends me right towards that direction. But no, seriously. Yeah. I've always been into comic books, sci-fi, horror, and fantasy stuff, and I've always actually gone to or been a part of and even ran some of my own conventions.
Ah.
The whole thing that turned me towards this direction, though, is that around 2001 New Year's Eve, I had my own personal sighting experience that I can't explain. I can honestly say I saw a black triangle flying towards Puerto Rico. And that's all, I had my theories on it. We'll get to that in a second. And that's on the UFO side. Now on to the paranormal side, what got me interested in is that when my mom passed, I actually had my own personal experience, which sort of left me wondering, is there something really, quantifiable out there that, mm-hmm. we can measure and we can record and we could look into about the afterlife. But what really, really shocked me was when I went to Edinburgh, Scotland, I had something that I caught on video, audio, and photo that I really can't explain. And that pretty much convinced me right then and there, there's definitely something out there.
Now, was that down in the underground caverns or subterranean places in under Edinburgh, where all those people died, and has a very checkered past, doesn't it?
Actually, it was at the Covenanters Prison in the Greyfriars Cemetery, not in the underground.
Ah.
What's really interesting is that cemetery, at one point in time, was used as a mass grave during the plague.
Mm.
There is over 50,000 bodies within less than football field area. By the way, have you ever heard the term dead ringer?
Yeah.
Like you're a dead ringer for someone? That is actually where the term dead ringer originated. See, what happened is during the plague, people were dying and people were going into comas and were assumed dead. And the whole thing is that off they went to the Great Fire Cemetery and got dumped in. The whole thing is that some people that were near death and in a coma ended up coming out of it and walking out of the grave. At which point people realize that either they're undead or there are still some live people in there. So at that point in time, the city actually started putting bells around people's necks as they put them into the mass grave. So should someone actually wake up, they would ring the bell. Hence the dead ringer term.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep. Yep.
Interesting stuff, man.
Yep, they even had, if I recall right, they even had real fancy coffins rigged up where if they woke up in the coffin, they could pull the cord and it would ring a bell in the cemetery.
Yes, it was. Yeah, they did that in a couple of parts of the world, yeah.
Yeah.
After that incident.
All right, well, that's fascinating stuff. You know, you wonder where some of these expressions come from. Let's talk about putting on an event. You know, if a group would like to put on a small local event or something, you know, do you have any advice? Anything?
Absolutely.
Maybe they've never done it before. What would they do first?
Well, first they want to do, first anybody who's interested in doing an event is figuring out where is the most cost-effective location to do an event, whether it be a hotel, little conference room, whether it be the back of the Denny's that has their, by the way, Denny's, you now owe me free scrambled eggs now that I plugged your name. You know, the Denny's back room that has the sliding doors, or a school, or someplace that has conference room. Sometimes even a shared office environment is even an option, where they have their conference rooms available for rent.
Mm-hmm.
The whole smart thing to do is make it as cost-effective as possible for not just you running the event, but for attendees to get there as well. That's the most important thing. I hate places that, you know, take, for example, you go into a hotel, but besides paying your $10 fee or $20 fee for the day to go into the seminar, you also end up, because it's parking by the hour, you end up with a $25 parking bill.
Yeah.
No, that's not good.
No.
So what you want to do is you want to negotiate in writing, you know, what kind of space you're asking for, how frequently you're asking for it, and how cost-effective it's going to be. Always get it in writing. That's
always
a must.
There should always be a contract.
Absolutely. And always see if you can negotiate to some degree for the space. Take, for example, I'll use the Denny's thing again. What I recommend trying to do is instead of them offering you, oh, yeah, we'll give you this room for $150, you could turn around and say to them, well, instead of doing that, how about if we're giving you $200 in food between 20 people spending 10 bucks at least?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So
yeah, that's a great idea.
That way, guess what? It's a wash, and you have your space.
Yeah.
So it works out. There's all sorts of ways to negotiate for space. Second thing you always want to do is publicity.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, of course, it's a closed meeting.
Right. So let's say it's open to the public or, you know, other groups or whatever. What would be
some cost? Okay, no secret societies, right?
Yeah, no secret societies.
Nope.
But you could.
Okay,
that would be a different one. Yeah, another one. That'd be the one after.
All right, fine.
So what are they, what's some cost-effective ways of publicity?
Well, Craigslist is always a wonderful way to advertise. There's also the local trendy papers, whether it be the 2030-something magazine or whether it be the weekly paper. You definitely want to go that direction. Getting it on the radio might not always be an option, but community service bulletin boards on cable TV does sometimes work. Most of us, I know, when was the last time you actually looked at one of those things? Hardly ever. But guess what? When you're channel surfing, you always come across it, and you always look at what's on the screen right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
You're channel surfing between commercials, and you're finding something. So that's another way to advertise. Also, always use the Internet. It is your greatest ally and your greatest nightmare.
Yeah, that's no lie there. Okay, so you can promote it around. Tell people you know. A couple of my ideas. If you've got any local metaphysical shops, you might be able to spread the word there. They might let you put up a flyer. You might even do it in conjunction with them. You might even do it there. A lot of them have some meeting space that they might.
Just a question comes to mind, Sean. In the times that you've been doing this, doing the conferences, have you seen an increase in the interest in paranormal or UFOs, or has it waxed and waned, or are you seeing it on the uprise?
My personal opinion,
mm-hmm.
I think the closer it gets to 2012, the mm-hmm. more of a leaning towards it we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, after every turn of the century, even in the Victorian era, there was a leaning towards emerging sciences and emerging philosophy of afterlife and stuff that's going on across the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably say it's gonna keep on going and going and going, and hit at about 2012, it'll be a crescendo, and then it might just taper off.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll still have the hardcore, I don't want to use the word believers or fanatics, the
mm-hmm.
hardcore main body of people that are fascinated, that believe, that hope, that will always be there. But most muggles, regular people, sorry, bad Harry Potter reference there,
mm-hmm.
Most regular people are at this point in time curious, at least, about the afterlife, are curious about life on other planets. Are we visited? All these questions are coming to mind in the mainstream right now. Even the Vatican has admitted at some point in time in the past year that even they will acknowledge that there is a possibility of life on other planets. That doesn't contradict the Holy Bible.
Yeah.
So, there's all sorts of perspectives at this point in time. There's too many unanswered questions throughout our entire history and prehistory that cannot be explained without an outside influence.
Right.
So do you think that it sounds like what you're saying is you feel that we're slowly moving towards some sort of paradigm shift?
That would be nice. I don't know if it's actually going to happen, but it will be a nice thing, and I would like it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that there's going to be a crescendo about 2012, and then those that are the hardcore will stay pursuing knowledge. And those others, it's like, oh, we survived 2012, nothing happened, let's go on with life.
Yeah, we can throw our rosary beads away, or we can do whatever we need to, or whatever mantra we're choosing, and go back to our evil old ways.
All right, so go ahead, Seth.
No, go ahead, ask me a question. What
I was just
going to
say, so we found a location, and what are some other points that we might need to keep in mind in setting this thing up? We've got publicity.
Publicity, pertinent topics is always a definite important thing. If you can get a guest speaker, great. If not, always try and get a real speaker and not run a video. That's one thing I definitely always like to say. People just can't, people can sit in a screen in a movie theater and serve popcorn, or you can sit at home watching it. You want live interaction. You also want to always make sure that when you have a speaker, always save literally 15 minutes to half an hour on the back end for people to ask questions, because people always have them.
So,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
How do you pay for a speaker then?
Well, that's where the $10 actually be at the event or however much is put in. Sometimes, always, also, money is not the only motivator to get a speaker to come out. There's other incentives that you can offer them that makes it worth their while to be there as a speaker for you.
And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, just go ahead. You were going to say it. Enumerate what those might be.
Speaker has a book. He has the opportunity to sell books. Another thing is that, you can actually pre-sell the books as a marketing event. You can also, if the speaker has a book, you also now can open the door up to advertising at a wide variety of bookstores. And I also mean the big three. That is Barnes & Noble, Borders, and who's the other one?
Books a Million?
No. Who's the other nationwide? Barnes & Noble, Borders. Darn, the name escaping me.
Well, there's Walden Books. There's another one, Dalton. B. Dalton, Books a Million.
Yeah, Books a Million, B. Dalton, Walden Books. They're all good to advertise within a 25-mile radius. Also, that's one of the things you want to do. You want to try and let people know within a 25-mile radius that this speaker is coming. Also, see if there's anybody that has similar interest in any of the groups on any of the internet sites like Yahoo, any Google groups, any of the groups that are out there. You want to let them know that someone is coming, someone's going to be speaking. And if you can, try and let people pre-register for the limited seats that are there. Because there's only so many amounts of seats available, you want to let people do this as much in advance as possible. Because you can't rely on people just showing up that day, hey, I'm here.
Yeah. So how much do they charge?
It's all a variable. It's a multiple and a variable of how much it's going to cost you to have that speaker there.
Okay.
It's a mathematical equation that I'm not, that is going to take too long for me to go into here. But if anybody wants to email me, hit the website at ufoinfoweekend.com. Feel free to email me, and I will be more than happy to try and help you calculate how to make it cost-effective for someone to be there.
Okay. Wow, that's cool.
Not a problem. And with my circle of influence of people that I deal with on a regular basis, I might be even able to try and reach out to some of the speakers and see if they can make it to their event.
And another thing that we've used in the past is, these groups might know of other local researchers or people who might speak, and, take advantage of some of the local people that you have, too. That might work for you. All right, so we've got our place, our publicity, our topic, our speakers, and let's kind of fast forward to the day of the event. Any things to keep in mind?
Yes, you always need to make sure that whoever the speaker is, can they project in what size of a room, or do you need sound? Mm-hmm. You also need video. That's another thing. Most people today have either an LCD projector or, almost any businessman in any circle or any group has a LCD projector that they can loan to the group for the day. Mm-hmm. Hopefully a screen to go along with it. If not, you obviously have to rent one, and there's all sorts of cost-effective ways to do that. If you're in a hotel, find someone else. You don't want to pay hotel rates for AV equipment. Trust me.
Yeah, they're horrendous.
They're almost the cost of buying them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in my seminar days, we've had to spend $10 to rent a power strip or an extension cord, or more.
Right.
So hotels will get you. Many of them will get you. So bear that in mind.
Oh, yeah. 100% yes.
Yeah.
You also want to make sure that there's enough seats for everybody. Always make sure that you have – one thing I've learned is that usually about 60% of the attendees will pre-register even up to the last day, and another 40% will actually walk in the door. That's a current statistic where I find that's accurate in major metropolitan areas. I don't know where it is in smaller towns, but that's about average in major metropolitan areas. So if you have 50 people registering, 60 people registering – make sure you got seats for 100, just to be on the safe side.
That's good, yeah. Okay, so what about program length or individual presentation length and breaks and things like that?
Well, most seminars and most presentations, it depends. The variable is, are you doing it for a full day? Is it an evening thing during the midweek? There's all sorts of questions and variables when it comes to that. If it's a full day thing, you always want to try and do morning, but not first thing in the morning. Even on the weekends, most people like to sleep in. So I personally recommend you start, if you're doing an all-day event, I personally like to start at 11 in the morning, do a break at about 1 o'clock till 2 o'clock, and then from 2 o'clock till about 6 o'clock or 8 o'clock. And then if everybody wants to, let everybody pile out for dinner and go to the same place for dinner and relax and unwind together. That's my thought for a day event in a weekend. If it's a nighttime event, you always want to start somewhere about 7:30. Reason, by the way, I start at 11 or at 7:30, you always want to factor in, even in any city, traffic delays.
Mm-hmm.
People getting off work. People wanting to shower and shave before coming out. So you want to take all those things into account and make the time as convenient as possible. If it's a nighttime event, you run from 7:30 till about 10:30. That gives you about 2 hours, maybe a 15-minute break for cookies and milk, or cookies and coffee, whatever you want to do, somewhere in the middle. How's that for starters?
That's good. Good deal. So, all right. So we've got our event. Any other things you can think of that might make it a little special, a little more attractive, or like during? I mean, people do raffles, they'll do drawings, house, door prizes, things like that. Any of that stuff?
Well, it's a great idea. The problem is that I've known some seriously fanatical people, and door prizes are okay if there's no cost involved. But raffling is considered gambling in almost every state. And technically, if the item is worth over $50, you have to register with the Department of Agriculture as a gambling event for that day. I know the likelihood of someone getting caught is almost nil, but if you do get spanked, it's a $5,000 fine.
Ouch.
Well, people need to check the raffling. Raffles happen all the time, but they got to make sure that they're within the law. And you're right. And, the way to skirt that is to not charge. I mean, if, for example, if anybody who registers gets a ticket, a free ticket, of course, the law might consider that purchased, but just check your laws. Seth, you bring up a good point, because if we're not careful, what we think is innocent and is innocent could be deemed as gambling by the state. So,
I'll give you a perfect example. I was at a paranormal convention the other year, and someone was raffling off an EMF meter.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure everybody knows what an EMF meter is.
Sure, they do.
Okay. Well, they purchased it wholesale at about $40, but it had a retail value of $75. So, and they were doing it at their table at an event to generate revenue for the cost of being there, because all they were doing is promoting something else. So they were raffling off an EMF meter.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, though, there was someone from law enforcement that was at the convention, and, he bought 5 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, they sold all the X amount of tickets and everything. But because he didn't win, he was so upset that he decided to report it to the Department of Agriculture, and the person that was running the event, not the person that was actually doing the raffle, but it fell on the head of the person running the event, who sold the table to the person running the raffle. He ended up with the fine.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's hear it for the powers that be in big government. Woo!
Yeah. Yeah. Scary, huh?
Well, here's a couple of questions from the chat room.
Okay.
One from Sharon. Have you seen any fake conferences being set up? She'd recently heard about someone warning about one in Cincinnati that kept being postponed.
A fake conference?
Yeah, basically, a conference apparently is announced, but it keeps getting postponed so that, it's not real. It's a scam.
Well, it has emerged that there have been a couple of events that are like that. I've yet to have heard of it happening in the paranormal or UFO or ghost hunting arena.
Okay.
It has happened in the past in the sci-fi and in the comic book arena. There were a couple of people that tried supposedly to put something on in Vegas, and that sort of vaporized and disappeared. And then there was another guy who tried putting on a traveling one somewhere every week in the country event, which sort of failed, to say the least. That guy, I believe, is now in jail because he owes many millions of dollars to many celebrities for contract commitments.
Well, that kind of leads to another question then. What if a group plans a day-long event, they've sold some tickets, registration tickets for 10 or 20 bucks, they've got 50 or so people registered, and, they come down to the final few days, and you know, some unexpected event, some circumstance props up where they end up having to cancel it, how should they go about handling that with the registrants?
That's a great question. The first thing they want to do is, A, if it is due to the speaker not being able to make it because of his obligations, that's a justifiable reason. Almost every contract, when you do have with the speaker, they have an out clause. For those of you that are putting together a speaking engagement, that's one thing a speaker will always ask for, is an out clause. And the out clause is usually going to be done up till he has the ability to out, usually up until 48 hours prior to the event. This happens on a regular basis, especially with guest speakers that travel the country, as well as that are in the film industry or TV industry or in the speaking industry. When they get a guest spot on Larry King or they're stuck on a film set, they have to be able to opt out. Always in that case, though, try and have a secondary speaker of the same caliber. That's always a good choice and option to have as well. Always have a second person to roll up. If that doesn't work, the first thing you want to do, because of the way most people are pre-registering, you have contact information for those people who registered and paid in order to be able to reach out and contact them and either let them know that, A, you've chosen to reschedule, or, B, you can't fulfill the entire event at all and a refund is heading back their way. That's always a wonderful thing to do. So those are pretty much your primary choices. I mean, for me, take for example, right now my event was supposed to be scheduled. And by the way, you guys are breaking the news actually tonight. It's also going up on the website later on tonight into the morning that my event, which was supposed to be November 12th through 15th, unfortunately, due to my own personal medical reasons, I have to postpone till July. And by the way, if Sharon was asking if I'm doing a fake event, the answer is definitely not. You're welcome to confirm with the hotel as well as all the speakers.
She wasn't asking you. She was wondering about other fake conferences or if you've heard of any.
Some of them are out there, but honestly, do your due diligence. If someone proclaims that they have this and this speaker, most speakers have a website. You can shoot an email to their webmaster and say, hey, I just saw your name listed on this website for this event. Are you going to be there?
Yeah.
If the speaker says, I have no idea what you're talking about, guess what? That's what we call a red flag.
Yeah.
So, you know,
a big bright
like
one.
It's not bingo. That's what we call a Yahtzee.
Well, here's another question from the chat from a different person regarding these events. The question is, are threats of non-UFO believers a problem at these events?
Oh, we welcome them. Are you kidding me? They're not going to be sitting outside and protesting. We want to spend the $10 and have a seat.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Guess what? If they're there protesting, it's like if they want to be there, if they're debunkers, come on, have a seat. Okay, so you're telling me, okay, I'll agree with the debunker, and I'll agree with the debunker this way. If 1% of 1% of 1% of all the stories, or let me reverse it the other way around, if 99.99999% of all these stories are hoaxes, what does that tell you? There's 0.11% that has been proven to be real. So if that's real, the whole thing is real.
Good answer. So, that kind of leads into another question, which might be related for me. It's just about hecklers. I think maybe that's what it was, you know, these UFO non-believers or even non-paranormal believers, whatever. If they want to come and, you know, what if they're a problem in the audience? What if they heckle?
If they heckle, you know something? If they heckle, let them, and I'll explain why. Most speakers, because of their experience speaking, know how to control and dumb down a heckler. 90% of the time, when you're up on the stage, when you're up on the podium, you are in control of the crowd.
Yep.
That's the one key rule. If you can't talk to your crowd, and if you can't talk to them, not at them, but talk to them, you don't deserve to be up on the podium. I'm sorry, that's my personal philosophy.
No, that's a good answer. Actually, the speaker is in control of the audience, and if there is a heckler, it is up to the speaker to handle a heckler. Now, you know, and I'll tell you, that is usually a rarity. It can happen, but it's usually very rare. And if somebody does that, if they speak up like that and the speaker addresses them like they've been trained to do, the heckler usually shuts up. In rare events, you know, if somebody really wanted to make a scene, then, you know, you can get the security, hotel security, whoever to handle, call the police, but it's not going to be an issue.
You don't see some, you're not going to find some mad, crazy heckler open up a shirt and he's going to actually have green slime waiting, green jello that's going to explode on everyone's head. It's alien guts! What is the heckler going to say? I don't believe.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Let's move on. Okay, thank you. Now, moving on.
Yeah, exactly. Have a seat,
what
sir.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just said, have a seat, sir.
No. It's like, okay, you don't believe. And you know something? I'm going to address your specific issue at the end of this lecture that you see on the screen here. Right when I open up the Q&A session, guess what? You're going to be the first one I'm going to point to. There it is. Just diffuse the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a chance to speak. But wait till I'm done. And if you still don't believe, I'll still let you speak. It's okay.
Yeah.
We like non-believers because then we start rolling out the evidence.
Yeah,
that you can't deny.
Diffuses the situation. All right, good answer. So we've talked about some of these points and some great points there. And I mean, everything you said is spot on. I mean, when you're dealing with hotels, especially bigger hotels, just make sure you read the contract. And one last little thing. In addition to go ahead.
Let me throw something in there.
Go ahead.
Should anybody be looking to do an event, I do offer my consulting services for hotel contract negotiation, attendee acquisition ideas, as well as vendor, as well as speaker acquisition, and my services are available throughout the entire country.
Okay.
I love beating up hotels and their contracts.
Oh, God.
Certain hotels, actually, I hang out and have dinner with for fun. Not because they're trying to solicit me or I'm trying to solicit them, but I hang out with their national sales managers. Last year I gave one major chain across all the events I'm aligned with 40,000 room nights.
Wow.
Between all the conventions that I'm aligned with or I've helped negotiate contracts with. Let's put it this way. I got hotel points like you wouldn't believe.
I'll bet.
But in all seriousness, though, if anybody's looking to do an event and they get a hotel contract that looks like it's Chinese and it's not owned by someone that's Chinese, it's owned by someone that's Indian, call me. Or feel free to hit the website. I will be more than happy to help you edit, negotiate, and flip it around so it's to either equal terms or it's balanced towards your side.
I'm sorry, you said that is owned or is not owned by Chinese or Indian? I'm sorry, I missed that.
I was jokingly saying that, you know, if you have a hotel contract and it looks like it's Chinese by the legal words that are in there.
All Greek
but
to
it's
me.
Really owned, right, but it's still owned by an Indian guy.
Mm-hmm.
How many hotels have you checked into and it has a little plant saying, this is owned by the Patel Group?
Mm. All right, so the point that I really wanted to make for those who are actually planning a bigger event at a hotel, and especially bigger hotels, be aware that many, if not most, of these hotels have a clause in a contract which states that they can move your venue to another room. They can do things like that. So make sure you look for that fine print, and anything you don't like, you negotiate it.
Oh, yes, I will definitely agree with that. I have certain phrases that I actually plug in instead of that clause that they reserve the right based on performance to move you to a different room. You can actually, in the contract, put in financial penalties on their end should they choose to move you to another room.
Yeah, because that can screw you up. And so
it's like, you have 100 people coming, they guaranteed you a room that could seat 100 people in classroom style, which is those little 18-inch tables. And they turn around and, you know, we've got the Smith's wedding coming in, so we're shifting you to another room. Now, we're giving you 100 seats. The problem is it's theater style.
Right.
It gives you a hell of a lot shorter and smaller, cramped up space.
And that sends me to a place you can't get a postcard from. Yes, it
does. I'm sorry, what?
That sends me to a place you can't get a postcard from. So
true enough.
You don't, you know, you make sure and you stick to your guns on that. And, you know, you do, you make it clear to them, you will not change the room for anything. And you, they just wanted to point that out. So let's get to your sighting. You had an interesting sighting. Can you tell us about that? Refresh your memories a little bit about
it. Yes, as a matter of fact, I can. Let's see. Oh, by the way, one other thing I forgot to mention also. If anybody is interested in being part of my event or wants to get to my event, even you guys, I forgot to mention, does anybody like to go for free to an event like this?
No, we like to pay money, lots of it.
Okay, this is another thing that you can implement to let people come for free.
Sure.
I actually have on our website what we call an affiliate program. People can actually sign up and register for our affiliate program, which allows you to promote and direct people to come to my event, and any traffic that results in someone registering for the event, you get 10% commission.
Wow.
And by the way, that's another marketing aspect that you can think of as well.
Good.
So for 10 attendees that are your friends that you drag along with you, you get to go for free.
Excellent. Excellent idea.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And if you go above and beyond that, you make even more money. Funny as it is, I actually just last week had to pay a 15-year-old girl $870 for marketing me and promoting me on the internet and driving traffic to my website for a week and a half.
Wow.
Nice.
I was just totally shocked at the skill set she had. She just, like, went crazy on me. It was wonderful.
All right, so your sighting.
My sighting. Let's see. It was New Year's Eve 2001. Partying on, let's see, I forgot what island I was on. It was on the islands in Key West. I had a friend of mine who is in the film industry who had rented and decided to throw a party. Don't worry, I'm not dropping any names. You know who you are, and Jackal knows who it is too. But anyway, so we're partying and we're relaxing. We're, the clock has already ticked down. It's already 2001. It's about 1:30-ish in the morning, and I got to admit, I saw a black triangle with no propulsion, no jets, no nothing, going over maybe, you think you could be up about half an inch in the sky, which probably would estimate me somewhere about at least 30,000 feet or so. Going across, blocking out some stars, and you know it was real because you know how many stars you can see in Key West area because there's no major ambient light? It's amazing.
Probably a lot.
Yeah, a lot. So I thought going one on each corner.
Mm-hmm.
And actually it was pretty dull lights too, which I found interesting. And it was going towards Puerto Rico.
Huh.
And I saw it and I'm like, what the blank is that? And I pointed it out to two of my friends and was like, oh, my God, I'm too drunk to go in and get a camera, but oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my personal experience when it comes to seeing a UFO. Do I think it was one of ours as opposed to one of theirs? I would probably bet it's one of ours.
So what's your theory on this?
That's a whole other thought. How many people do we have in the chat room, by the way?
We have 6 people in the chat room.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask everybody here to Google the words Boeing Neutral Buoyancy Aircraft. You'll put it in?
I'm going to put it in the chat room. Go ahead.
All right, my personal opinion on what the hour triangles are, I believe that some of the technology is not of this earth, but I would probably say that what we're looking at that's ours is a neutral buoyancy aircraft. I don't know if it's done by Boeing, if it's done by Skunk Works. I don't know who makes it, but it's basically a lighter-than-air airship that's not flammable, that has what we would call ducted fan work to use as propulsion inside the Earth's atmosphere. What's the purpose of this ship? From what I hear, it's basically a floating-in-the-air aircraft carrier.
Hmm.
Used primarily for deployment of the Joint Strike Fighters, F-22s, and F-35s. The ship can house and deliver strike fighters almost anywhere in the world on very short notice. That is what my understanding is, what our triangle is.
I got you. So what led you to this hypothesis?
Based on some of the things that have been pointed to me on the internet, as well as because of the circles that I travel in, both in the science fiction world, science fact world, I've come to this conclusion from multiple opinions on this.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
That's as far as I'm going to go. I don't need anybody getting killed over me making a statement like this.
All right. Interesting stuff, you know, and you always wonder how much our government has going on, and of course, you know, as everyone's pretty well aware, it's such a cool thing for the government. I mean, it's such a great cover, because if people look up and see something strange, the government wants them to believe it's just some UFO. You know, I mean, they love it, so keep
looking
into
the whole disinformation kink.
Well, the other thing is how many of us realize that, you know, what we see in the public sector is usually about 20 to 30 years behind what the government has access to and is using.
Yep, you have absolutely correct on that, Seth. And, you know, a lot of folks aren't aware of the fact that when the United States was using the U-2 and the SR-71 Blackbird, which was
right.
The U-2's replacement, they were reported many times as UFOs, and you know, they just let it go. They let it ride because that was better cover for them than, you know, if they would have come out with some disclaimer anyway.
No, you're right. And, you know, it's, you know, who knows what technology we actually have. Do I think that we have anti-gravity devices? You know, science and even Intel has shown that they're able to levitate stuff in a zero cold atmosphere. You know, without a problem. What's the other one? Swirling mercury in a magnetic shield creates some type of a gravimetric propulsion system. There's all sorts of science that out there that shows that, you know, doing, you know, using devices to counteract the effects of gravity of the planet as well as of the solar system exists. The whole thing is, you know, how much of it are we actually using now, and how much of it is serious?
Mm-hmm. Good points. Well, great. Well, tonight we've appreciated, you know, your time and your tips and interesting stuff. Good points on hosting an event for folks.
Why? Thank you.
Pay attention to. I mean, somebody's been doing it for a while, so good stuff. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing it. Would you share, buddy, your website again with everyone?
Sure. It is going to be UFOinfoweekend.com. Again, that's UFOinfoweekend.com. And I hope to see everybody who had a chance to listen get there.
Yeah.
And if you can't make it, you know something, sign up on the affiliate program, see if you can get there for free.
And if they want to use your consulting services, they can contact you at the same site, or do you have a different one for that?
They can go to that site, or they can go to brightmindworks.com.
Okay, great.
And, you know, Seth, keep us in mind as things progress, and, you know, feel free to give us a call if you'd like to come back and announce where we're heading with the conference.
Not a problem.
We want to wish you the very best, and we really, really appreciate you coming on the show and talking about the conference. lot of folks didn't. I didn't even know what was going on. I'm a big UFO buff, so I'm really excited about it.
Well, if all works out, our event will hold at maximum 2,500 people on property. We can't take any more than that. Let's see. Right now, even with people that can't make it to the July event or are holding off on deciding on the July event, right now I am well past 70% in sales. So those of you that do want to make it, trust me, you want to register now. So, if you are interested, do something about it now, because I don't want anybody getting to the door and the fire marshal saying, sorry, you can't come in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how far you drove. Oh, that reminds me. The reason I know that I can only have 2,500, because the fire marshal happens to be a fan himself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
No, it's not. It's not a good thing. him and his daughter are going to be joining us. And the problem with that is just like, you know, I know how much this hotel can hold. I'm not going to let you oversell it. I will shut you down, or I will shut out anybody who is beyond capacity. And I'm like, oh, don't do that to me.
All right, listen, the best of luck on your medical issues, and we'll hope to hook up with you again in a few months.
All right, by the way, since you brought up the word medical issues, I was being a little bit vague earlier. The reason I have to delay the event, and those people that are listening to the archive and are listening live, the reason that I have to delay the event from November and put it off to July is because of my own personal medical reasons. I just have to keep me tied up.
You had used the phrase on the air, so I repeated it. Yeah, so, but we still wish you the best of luck with that, and we look forward to hooking up with you in a few months, and wish you the best of luck, and thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate your time.
Yes, Seth, thanks so very much, and thanks to Jackal, too. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Not a worry. Guys, enjoy the night, and I hope to listen to you guys in the future.
All right.
Absolutely. Take care, Seth.
Good night.
All right. Be well.
Bye.
Okay, folks, interesting points that we talked about tonight with Seth Weiler. And some good points to keep in mind if you're going to do an event. Really think it through. Make sure it's good common sense. Be very, 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 very leery about spending a whole lot, especially in the beginning. I mean, you can do these things up, like the big, huge conventions do, but that costs a lot of money. So make it nice. Have some good content available, and find a venue that's affordable, such as a library or many of the places that's mentioned.
And it's okay to start out small.
Yeah.
It's okay to start out small and work your way up.
Yeah.
Seth didn't get there overnight, and if that's what you and your group want to do, you won't get there overnight either. And we're all on a learning curve.
And as far as the speakers go, anybody in your local area that is pretty good and who can share some interesting information, ask them, because they're usually willing to do that. And you don't have to worry too much about honorariums. And what Seth had mentioned, perhaps a speaker has a book they want to sell, and if there's going to be a few people there, then that'll give them some opportunities too. So you don't always have to pay honorariums or even speaking fees, unless you're really talking about somebody who is pretty well known. So keep those things in mind. As far as just a couple of wrapping up comments, I mentioned this at the outset, that our deadline for the Fake a Photo contest is in one week from tonight, 12 midnight Eastern. So if you've got any expertise and you want to enter that contest, be sure and do so in the next week or so. And the first place winner will get a one-year membership to Paranexus, as well as their choice of the CPI or CLPI, the leadership course on Paranexus Academy. There's also second place winnings and a popular vote. You can submit those right on paranexus.org. Just look for the information there, and we'd love to see what you got. And just to specify, to be accurate about this, this is really an educational experience. It's fun too, but we're really trying to show how these photos can be faked so that it will help people to identify things in the future just a little bit better. So it's part of the educational network. I'm just trying to think of what other things we've got going. We're looking at a little bit of a new website design that's being reviewed by the board members right now, and hopefully that'll be made available in the next day or so. We are right in the midst of applying for our 501c3 for those members who are interested, and we'll let you know how that goes. A lot of growth. And, you know, if anybody is interested in joining Paranexus staff, we are looking for someone with a little experience or a little ability, expertise in the public relations and media area, somebody that can handle different things, including, you know, our MySpace page, our Facebook, and so forth, and, you know, doing a little promotion. So if you know anybody or you are interested, visit Paranexus.org, look at the About Paranexus button for open staff positions. And, you know, as always, we're looking for good, grounded, solid folks to come and join us and be a part of us, either as staff or even as a member.
You might be able to work right alongside Doug Kelly and I, you know.
You might be so honored.
No, you could be helping us book guests on the radio show. As Doug said, we do have a lot of opportunities, and we encourage you, you know, don't think that you may not be the right person. If you've got that experience, you know, give us a call or send us an email. Yeah, because we're a very progressive organization, and we take a look at everybody, and you know, we don't bite. We're just as nice in person as we are on the air, right, guys?
Absolutely. You know, and Paranexus is here to stay, folks. I mean, it's not... I mean, our growth is slow, yes, but, you know, what do you expect? I mean, we've been around a year and a half. We're still growing. We continue to grow. We continue to refine. And, you know, we're really doing something nice here that is unique. It is not entirely being done anywhere. You know, we look at all of anomalous activity, not just hauntings and parapsychology, not just ufology, not just abductions. We look at all of it, and because we have theories that they're all the same thing, only different. So, you know, we have field investigator opportunities. There's a lot going, and this is really kind of a ground floor opportunity for folks. Your memberships is what supports us. None of our staff is paid. We all do this volunteer. And, you know, we don't have a huge overhead, but we do have some costs. So, you know, we appreciate people coming and joining and being a part of this. But we look forward to hearing from you. You know, when you join, share your expertise, share your research, share your thoughts. Let's you know, sharpen each other, as it were. So,
yeah, and we always, and as always, we do appreciate your support, and those folks out there that are members, you know, we appreciate your membership and your belief in what we're trying to accomplish here at Paranexus. So, you know, if there's anybody out there as well, we always tell our audience that if anybody wants to come on the show or they know a guest, by all means, you know, mm-hmm. send us an email or give us a call.
Yep.
We'll be happy to talk to you about it. So well, thanks again for all your support, folks.
Yes, indeed. And with that being said, we're just about out of time. Next week, we've got Mike Jones and his abduction show. So we'll look forward to that next week. We appreciate your time, and we hope to see you again on the show. Have a good night, everybody.
Hey, good night, everybody. Have a terrific weekend.
Sky. It's Paranexus Universe.